Hi, Amy, working hard?
Yeah. We've got our new database we started in last year, so it's still, every day.
Oh, those are
Little
always
tweaks.
fun.
Yeah.
I've done that several times in my career.
Yep.
Can you hear me? Great.
Yes.
Thank you.
There we go.
I wanted to let you know, Chair Brennan, that we have two excused absences. Matthew McClooney and Caitlin Turley cannot be here today.
Okay, I'm here. Where am I? Am I on mute?
Nope, I can hear you.
We hear you.
Oh, hi. Okay, great. Now, let's see. What is the background? What is this? The paint, is that a painting?
Oh, yes, it is.
Well, why don't you loan it to me?
I can email you the file.
The file, and I can have it enlarged. It'd be better if you just loan me the picture. You probably have it mounted or something.
No, this is just a digital photograph of a
really?
Painting. Yeah.
Wow.
I finally found out where I could do something like that, and that was one of the few things I had handy.
All right. It looks great.
Thank you.
Hiya.
Hey.
Are you in the mountains? Are you in the mountains?
Me?
Yeah.
I'm in Maui.
Are you really?
It's a canyon in Maui. There's actually a waterfall behind me. It's hard to see it.
Yeah. Are you putting me on, or are you actually there?
No, I'm not there. I wish I was. I was there. I took the picture.
All right. Wow. Well. You didn't invite me either.
You've been on so many trips, Sandy. You had to come up with some interesting backgrounds.
Yeah, I should, but you'll have to show me. Next time we get together, you're going to have to show me how to do these things. I don't know how to do that.
Well, Bob just figured it out on the fly, so he might be a better teacher than me.
So what do you look for?
So up in my the little square I'm looking at that has my picture in it, there's a series of nine, it looks like an old phone dial, nine squares, and if you hit that, then I was able to choose something in there. There you are.
Oh, Siri, do we have a quorum?
I believe we do. I can take roll to confirm when you're ready.
Sure, go ahead.
So it is 1:31. In the advisory committee meeting on June 2nd, the roll call. Okay. Chair Brennan.
Here.
Eric Andreessen.
Here.
Thank you. Sandy Copeland.
Here.
Director Hatchett.
Here.
Director Mack?
Here.
Thank you. Director McClooney is absent, excused. Director Rock?
Here.
Excuse me. Director Smith?
Here.
Director Storm? Director Storm? Director Stroh? Director, I can't hear you. I see you. Director Stroh? Alan?
Yes.
Thank you. Director Swint? Member Swint? And committee manager director Turley is absent, excused. So we have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. We do have quorum.
Thank you. This is the special meeting of the advisory committee. We receive a report on status of AB 361. Richard.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This, I'll be brief on this since you've probably been through this before, but we're still operating under a government or the governor's emergency proclamation due to COVID-19. And the Monterey County Health Officer is continuing to recommend that all public meetings that take place use social distancing. With those two conditions, we satisfy the requirements outlined in AB 361 for continued remote meetings after October 21st, 2021. And this body needs to find that we are still in that mode and vote on continuing to have teleconferencing for the next meeting, which is don't go away, but we'll open up our next meeting after this meeting, should you find that the conditions are satisfied for AB 361 requirements.
Thank you. Are there questions? Is there a motion?
So moved.
Is there a second?
Second.
Been moved and seconded to continue the status of AB 361 going out to the public. Are there any comments?
No comments received at the district office. And could I confirm who made the motion, the first?
Stroh and
Copeland.
Sandy. Okay, all those in favor of the motion say aye. Or
aye.
We need to do a roll call. I'm sorry.
That's okay. Chair Brennan?
Yes.
Committee member Copeland?
Yes.
Committee member Hatchett?
Yes.
Committee member Mack?
Yes.
Committee member Andreessen?
Yes.
Committee member Smith?
Yes.
Committee member Stroh?
Yes.
Committee member Rake?
Yes.
I'm going to double check. Committee member Swint, have you arrived? Okay, no. And all the rest are absent, passed unanimously.
Are there any comments on the summary of actions for the advisory committee meeting of March 3rd? Seeing no hands raised, we will accept those minutes. Now is the time for comments from the public. Are there any public comments? So we will adjourn the meeting and readjourn for the regular meeting of June 2nd. So I am calling the meeting to order. Roll call.
All right. All right. Committee Chair Brennan.
Yes. Yeah, I'm in here.
Committee Member Copeland.
Here.
Committee Member Hatchett.
Here.
Committee Member Rock.
Here.
Thank you for correcting me. Committee Member Smith.
Here.
Committee Member Stroh.
Here.
Committee Member Andreessen.
Here.
Committee Member Mack.
Here.
Committee Member Swint. Absent. Committee Member Turley. Committee Member McClooney. Committee Member Storm. So we do have quorum.
Thank you. Richard, are there any changes to the agenda?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would just suggest that we allow some time for the new advisory committee members to introduce themselves, but no changes other than that.
Okay, we have two new committee members. Would you like to introduce yourself?
Sure, I can go first.
Okay.
Hi, I'm Zane Hatchett. New committee member here, obviously, have love and passion for a lot of climate related issues, have love for government, and frankly, yeah, happy to be here. Looking forward to continuing on.
Thank you. And our other new committee member?
Yep, I think that's me. I'm Eric Andreessen. I live in Salinas. Background more in tech. Now I'm a local business owner here in Salinas. Very excited to be on board.
Well, welcome. The next action is to accept and file the minutes of March 3rd. Are there any comments? Any comments from the public?
Nothing received at the district office.
Okay, thank you. We'll accept and file those actions for the March 3rd meeting. Are there any comments from the public on items not on the agenda? Okay, we'll go to a presentation on lawn and garden equipment replacement program, Dave Frisbee.
Okay. Every year, the Moyer program, the state Carl Moyer program, which is set up to provide incentives for tractors and marine vessels and other diesel engines and equipment, we usually get a grant for that every year. The state actually holds back some funding routinely, and then they'll reissue the funds to districts for special projects. This year, the state is asking districts to develop a lawn and garden equipment replacement program. And so Ty Bell will be introducing the potential lawn and garden equipment program. So take away, Ty.
All right.
Thank you. Ty?
Good afternoon, distinguished members of the advisory committee, and welcome to the new members as well. My name is Ty Bell. I'm a recently promoted planner here at the Monterey Bay Air Resources District. And as David explained, I will be going over our lawn and garden equipment replacement program. So just a quick background on some of the legislation that preceded the most recent one. So back in, I believe it was September of 2020, the governor signed or issued his executive order N-79-20. And in short, that basically sets out a goal for California to transition to 100% zero emission state by 2035. So in support of the governor's mission, the state assembly passed AB 1346. So AB 1346 basically revisits the small off-road engine regulations that were initially passed back in 1990. So it's divided into two phases. Phase one is mostly affects the small off-road engines, and I'll go into explaining more about what that is here in a moment. So small off-road engines, such as like your lawnmowers, leaf blowers, they're going to need to be zero emissions starting in 2024. And these only apply to newly manufactured small off-road engines or SOAR. So any gasoline powered SOAR that are currently on the shelves can continue to be sold. It's just going to be phased out. Right. And there's not a ban on using. So if you already own a gasoline powered motor, there's not going to be a ban on continuing to use that piece of equipment. So basically, you just won't be able, there won't be any new SOAR being offered in California past 2024. Also in 2024, your generators and large pressure washers, they don't need to be zero emissions. That will happen in 2028. But in 2024, the generators will need to reduce emissions between 40 and 90%. So small off-road engines, I already kind of gave an example, lawnmowers and leaf blowers, edge trimmers. But basically, they are spark ignition engines that are rated at or below 25 horsepower. And I just wanted to put up this stat here to kind of highlight what's been going on or what's not been going on with SOAR regulations. So right now there's about 15.4 million SOAR in California. In comparison, there's about 14 million light duty passenger vehicles in the state. As you can see here, only 8% of that 15.4 million is commercial grade lawn and garden equipment. But that 8% actually accounts for 20% of the smog forming emissions during the summer months in California. So obviously they have a pretty big impact. And furthermore, so with the SOAR emissions, another consideration is that back in 1990 is when CARB first adopted the SOAR regulations. But since then, there really hasn't been any updates to those regulations, and that's why it's being visited now. And due to those regulations that were put in place by CARB, the SOAR emissions are actually 40 to 80% cleaner today than they were pre-1990. However, as you can see on this graph here, the SOAR emissions are starting to outpace passenger duty emissions, passenger car duty emissions. And by 2031, it's projected the SOAR emissions will be twice that of passenger cars. And to further highlight the emissions impact of SOAR, this is actually an EPA study that was done here, where they determined that 1 hour of gasoline mower use is actually equivalent to the emissions produced driving from LA to Las Vegas, which is about 300 miles. Also, same thing with the leaf blower, using that for 1 hour, it's equivalent of driving from LA to Denver, which is about 1,100 miles. So as David, I believe he mentioned it, the funding for this program, it's coming from the CARB state reserves. So every year, 10% of the CARB funds are set aside in the reserve fund for special projects. So for this coming fiscal year, the lawn and garden equipment replacements, what's been designated. So our allocation in that pot of money, it's $360,000. So our allocation is actually based on a formula that's found in the California Health and Safety Code, as well as is determined also by the number of districts that apply for the funding. Okay, so as far as eligibility for the project, so a big thing to point out here is the guidelines that they take the program is found in Chapter 9 of the MOAR guidelines. Here in June.
Hey, Ty, we lost you for a second there. Maybe you want to repeat your last couple sentences.
Which slide? Should I, funding or?
No, just chapter, and you were talking about chapter 9.
Oh, just here. Okay. So yeah, chapter 9 is currently being reviewed by CARB. So we're kind of waiting for the agreement, which was supposed to happen or occur this month. So we don't have a whole lot of guidance just yet. Looking at chapter 9, there are some stipulations in there, but what we do know is that the eligibility is going to be limited to commercial grade lawn and garden equipment, as well as eligible applicants would be landscaping operations. And some examples of that are here, you know, such as cities and schools, landscaping businesses, obviously, and sole proprietors. And these are just some examples of various companies. So some of these are well known to most of us probably, like DeWalt and Still. And then you have companies such as Mean Green Mowers and Ego, which are really focusing on the EV or zero emissions market. So as I mentioned earlier, the guidelines are still being hashed out, but we do have a few considerations that we could discuss. And so online application is pretty much how we run all of our programs here now through a program, a data management software system called Laserfish. Overall, I think it's great. It's reduced our staff time, our admin time, a great deal. Processes are a lot more efficient. We can get through these reviews a lot quicker than we did in the past. Feedback from the general public has been mostly positive for the same reasons, just the ease of use and the efficiency of it. So beyond that, we also want to consider whether or not this program will be designed as a rebate, meaning the incentive would be awarded after the fact. So the applicant would go out and purchase their new equipment, and we would issue the incentive after, or a voucher style system where they can come to us, get approved, and we provide a voucher that they could take to a manufacturer or retailer for credit towards the purchase of a zero emissions solar equipment. Also the verification, right? So that involves inspections. We want to verify that the old equipment, the baseline equipment, is eligible for the program, mostly meaning that it is a gas operated SOAR and that it is operational. We also want to ensure that it's destroyed. And that goes into one of the other points up there with the vendor and manufacturer agreement. So we would have to consider an agreement with a recycling facility. And we've most often used ANS Metals. I believe it's Castroville that they're located in. It might be Marina, I'm not sure which exact city they're located. And then obviously another inspection of the new piece of equipment and making sure that they did purchase the correct piece of equipment. At this time, I'll open to your questions and any discussions.
Are there questions from the committee? I have a question. What are the alternatives? Are there alternatives to this equipment?
To the zero emissions equipment?
Yes.
Not as far as I have been able to seek out, but I mean, it's really just the gasoline or electric. So there are two types of electric you could find, which are corded and cordless. And that's a point in the current guidelines. It does only limit the eligible equipment to cordless zero emission mowers only. That's the current guideline in Chapter 9. So that is the big point that is being reviewed, is CARB wants to expand eligible equipment beyond just the mowers. But to your question, ma'am, as far as I know, it's just the electrical gas.
So it's battery operated equipment that's an alternative, is that right?
Yes.
Okay, thank you. Lacey, you have a question?
A question and just a comment on the last question. I don't know if it's probably not realistic for, especially for commercial industries, but there's always manual, right? Remember the old, like you could use a broom to sweep up clippings and one of those old push lawnmowers. But
yeah, that just kind of,
I don't think those are very feasible for folks anymore.
and then the commercial scale, not so much.
Yeah. The question I have actually is just maybe a clarification. So I found it really impactful to see that comparison slide that showed how much smog or the equivalents. Yeah, it was the one you were just on.
Oh, the cars, yeah.
Yeah, can you just explain that a little bit more? Because it doesn't make sense, when you're thinking about how often you fill a gas tank to drive to Vegas versus how much you may use.
Right.
I'm assuming there's something in there that I'm missing.
It goes kind of more, I guess, maybe more into the engineering and design of the motors. So like these small engines, they're, you know, they're two stroke motors that you remember those old dirt bike, well, dirt bikes now are still two stroke. So, you know, they're louder, they're more polluting. I'm not as an expert in the engineering components or the mechanical aspects of that, but that's essentially it, right? So because with passenger vehicles, we all know, we're all aware, especially in California, of how polluting vehicle emissions, mobile emissions can be. But this is an area that just hasn't been regulated really since 1990. So it's just kind of been left behind. So that's where this chart is showing, you know, the yellow line of the SOAR, it's been flat, right? So the emissions levels have been consistent over the last 10 years due to lack of regulation, whereas the vehicle emissions have been dropping steadily and significantly since then. So I guess we're just trying to do what we haven't been doing in trying to reduce the SOAR.
Are these both VOC and NOx emissions combined?
That I do not know. The smog forming emissions, they didn't really specify exactly what those gases are.
I didn't understand the response. I'm having trouble hearing the...
Basically, I'm not sure. It's a simple answer. I'm not sure what exactly, if it's NOx or VOCs, or what levels that they've estimated there.
Well, it's probably mostly VOC emissions.
Mostly, but likely mostly hydrocarbons. Right. Because there's not, you don't have the, right. With two-stroke engines, you get more hydrocarbon emissions.
Okay, thank you. Other questions?
Yeah, do we have a breakdown of, I guess, within the SOAR category, what the distribution of different contributors is? I know you mentioned commercial, for example, but I guess, is there specific things like the, it looks like the leaf blower contributes much more than like the lawnmower, let's say. And even if that isn't specifically written into the program, that kind of gives us an idea of how to target the interventions in terms of outreach.
Not in the research that I found did I see a specific breakdown.
Yeah.
And I'll just add that, and Janet knows this well, that since we do pretty well with water conservation in our three counties, especially in Carmel and the peninsula, there are a lot fewer lawnmowers than leaf blowers.
Mm.
So it will depend. Some of the other jurisdictions that I'm thinking of, Orange County, for instance, where everybody has a green lawn, they're probably going to be more lawnmower intensive there. They'll probably still have their contingent of leaf blowers as well. But we're seeing that, you know, we've thought about lawnmower exchange program for many years, but we just don't see the population out there of lawnmowers.
Yeah.
Having said that, we don't have any data on the population of lawnmowers. That's not required. There's no way to get that as far as I'm aware, except for just some inferences of population. And like I said, drought, that really helps control what gets totally. That.
Are there any outreach programs designed for commercial applications? Because I'm imagining that there's probably a large part of the distribution that somebody that has a business that is just out there lawn mowing lawns and landscaping all day long versus like an individual owner of a house, right?
I'll just say these are geared towards initially towards commercial operations and carbon,
yeah.
A good push. There's already been a pushback from industry because a battery for some of these units can cost as much as the unit itself. And, you know, right now all you have to do is fill up at a gas station, and even at $6 or $7 a gallon, it's still probably cheaper, but not in the long run. So it's going to be a pretty heavy lift for CARB to get folks convinced to switch over. Plus the technology has not been there. Some of those players have just begun, like Still, which is known in the gas industry. They're just started to manufacture some of these more green types of battery powered equipment. So it's everything's in flux. We're giving you guys a heads up. So if there's something you wanted to see or questions, we'll be bringing this back to you most likely when we get it nailed down from CARB, as far as what the guidelines require, and you'll have more chance for input. But right now we just wanted to give you a heads up that money's coming our way, which is a curse and a blessing. but we're getting a lot of money to put things out there. So we definitely wanted to check with you guys first.
What is the time frame for enforcing this?
Oh, the guidelines are in process of being updated right now. Probably be they're projecting by the end of summer, maybe August is when they'll have those done. And we can start developing the program at that point.
So we don't know when the conversion has to occur?
Oh, this is a supplemental program to just incentivize commercial operations to destroy their old equipment and purchase new zero equipment. But the next year, 2024, is when the phase one starts for manufacturing and purchase of zero emission equipment.
So initially the program is voluntary? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, it's going to be an incentive program to replace old equipment, essentially.
And is there a point at which it will become mandatory?
Old equipment will remain allowed to be operated. So there's no motivation to replace equipment. It's just if you will go buy a new equipment, then it'll all be zero emission.
Right. There's no ban, but right. Any new manufacturer stores in California will have to be zero emissions in 2024.
So this is being imposed on manufacturers to develop alternative equipment, correct?
Yes, I think that's a good way to put it. Yeah, it's really a restriction on the manufacturers.
So my suggestion is in future presentations that those kind of questions be addressed, because it was not clear that this is voluntary. Any other comments from the committee members? Any recommendations to the board? If not, any comments from the public? Okay, let's go.
I guess I have one thing, if you don't mind. I guess if the main disincentive for commercial people is cost of battery, is that not included in the incentive?
It will be included in the incentive. Yes, I would just, I'm looking at a situation where the battery runs out. So you have to have more batteries on hand. So it's not just having one battery. You can't wait to have it recharged typically if you're in a commercial application.
Yeah, so it's sort of interesting because it seems like there's two considerations of cost there. One is that you're basically amortizing the cost of what you would pay over a longer, but you have an upfront cost for the battery, right? And the second one is lost working hours. So you have to have more of the batteries. So I guess, do we have an idea of, I guess, where that crossover point is? You know, like how many years do you have to be using new battery equipment in order for it to cost less than the combustion equivalent?
We could probably come up with something, but we have no idea. And I would say too that this is a state program that we're implementing.
Yeah.
They've got the cart sort of before the horse. It was said that we're driving manufacturers. We're indirectly driving manufacturers by requiring commercial operators to use this stuff that may not be readily available at this time. And during this period with COVID-19, probably a lot of this inventory is not on the shelves. So that's another added dimension.
Got it. Well, thank you very much. This is super interesting. And thanks to Ty.
Thank you.
Just a comment. Battery technology is like going crazy. I mean, what we'll be looking at in a year or two as far as the cost of batteries and the power that one battery would have versus two, three, four is going to change tremendously. I would imagine there would be people that would want to sit back and wait a little bit before they'd invest in technology that may be obsolete in a couple of years, you know? So just a comment.
Lacey, you had a comment? Lacey?
Yeah. I'm just wondering, I know there are These are being used already. I honestly, so I work at CSUMB, I can't remember what our landscapers are, but when I was working at UCSC, they switched them over probably 10, 7, 8 years ago. So I wonder if it would be beneficial to find folks who have commercial industry, you know, use these materials or these, this type of equipment commercially, and talk to them to see what's working, what they might recommend. So I don't know, it sounded like this was going to be coming back to us. So maybe when it comes back to us, we can incorporate some, like have a guest speaker, you know, have somebody that can speak to the use of these and help answer that question. Because my understanding when I was talking to somebody who has used this before is that they, on their trucks, they have like a bank of batteries. And so when one is done, they just go out and switch it out, which, yeah, might be a little bit of labor time to, you know, walk and switch it, but they don't have to wait, you know, the hours for it to recharge. They just switch out the batteries as they go. So those kind of things and, you know, how it's working on the ground might be helpful to incorporate into the discussion.
Well, I have a battery operated equipment, and I just have several batteries that I just use to replace it. So, and I've been using that for 10 years. So it's not new technology. Okay, if there are no other comments, let's go on to the next item, which is to receive a presentation on wildfire smoke clean air centers for vulnerable populations as a pilot program. David?
Hi. Due to the wildfires that we've seen the last 5 years or so, I think we've all experienced smoke in our communities that was uncomfortable or worse. And so the state, actually some of the districts in the state have been developing clean air centers, and it's where people can escape to breathe, at least for a short time, some clean air in those situations. So Irene Miranda has a planner with the district, has a presentation prepared for a potential grant that we may receive for developing clean air centers. So I'll turn that over to Irene.
I'm sharing my screen. Can you guys see the presentation?
Yes.
Okay. Well, hello members of the advisory committee. I'm Irene Miranda and I'm a new member of the planning department here. I'm very happy to be here. So I'm here to talk with you today about this pilot program that the state Air Resources Board is launching. So they want to help fund these clean air centers. A clean air center, as David said, is a location people can go to escape the smoke from wildfires. So this is specific to wildfire events. So today I'll go over the program requirements and how our air district qualifies for funding. And we can possibly talk about different locations where this might actually happen in our counties. Go to the next slide. There we go. So as you probably already know, prolonged exposure to wildfire smoke can definitely cause health issues. And one of the components in wildfire smoke is PM2.5, and that is particulate matter that's fine. It's 2.5 microns in size. And those fine particles can enter deeply into our lungs and then into our bloodstreams. And so it becomes a health burden that we don't really rid ourselves of, can definitely negatively impact us. So along comes AB 836, and there's $1 million available to the state to be administered through the air districts in California. Note that we don't currently have these funds, so we are now accepting applications and they will be accepted through June 30th. So the air district isn't tasked with actually implementing how the program or how these centers would run. So applicants would have to create their own plan. And that would include, you know, like when it would be open, whether people are spending the night, how their needs for health and hygiene are going to be taken care of. So all that needs to be planned ahead of time. So the applications need to include that. And also note that there are no administrative funds available for the Air District to actually help take place. So there are some considerations about how that would be administered, perhaps with Breathe California. So we'll have to see about that. All right, let me talk about what needs to be components of these centers. So applicants must make these centers accessible to the public. And also there has to be some sort of documentation showing that centers are located in areas of high smoke burden, and also that they're in or near priority populations. And I've put those two phrases in bold because there are specific guidelines that we have to meet. So I want to show you some of the data that Monterey Air District has showing that we would meet those burdens. So, okay, a high smoke burden has a definition according to this program. It means that there have been multiple days when wildfire smoke has brought the air quality index to unhealthy or worse during the past 5 years. So I'm sure you're all aware of the fires, especially in 2020, the River Fire, the Carmel Fire, the Dolan Fire, and those went on for 6 months in 2020, and smoke was impacting the district, you know, off and on during those 6 months. And then of course the CZU. So here's Año Nuevo Island. So this is just smoke blanketing our district. As you know, the district has air monitors. We have regulatory sensors that report data to the EPA. We have a couple of networks of air sensors, but here are the regulatory ones. So here's San Lorenzo Valley, Santa Cruz, Hollister, Salinas, Carmel, and King City. And each of these circles is colored according to the air quality index, which is represented right here. So a green circle means the air quality is good. And here's a moderate air quality sensors reading moderate air. So here is the unhealthy. If the AQI is 150 or above, that's when exposure over a long period of time is going to be considered unhealthy. The AQI measures a long period of time as 24 hours. So let's see what we have here. So these are the data that we collected actually for this presentation over the past 5 years on what our AQIs were reading in all of those areas. So 2017 to 2021. And remember, the requirement is that there were multiple days of air in the unhealthy range or higher, and all of the sensors are showing that. So throughout the district would qualify to place a clean air center. Does that make sense?
Are we talking about PM10 or 2.5?
2.5.
Okay.
Yeah. So these sensors measured 2.5 and other things like ozone, but the more damaging particulate matter is PM2.5. The other requirement is that the centers will be in or near areas of vulnerable populations. And this also is something that is data rich. There's information from the California Climate Investments priority populations. And it shows throughout the state, but here is our district. So there's Monterey, Santa Cruz, San Benito counties here. So this is the wide angle view. Anything in blue is a low income community. Anything in pink is disadvantaged, and these striped areas are both. So let's get a little closer into the Monterey Bay area. So here along the coast in Santa Cruz, the blue, remember, is low income. We also have Rio Del Mar, Watsonville, Hollister. We have Salinas, Spreckles, Marina, and Seaside. These are all areas that meet this definition of priority populations. So also, if we go back one, you'll see all of this area in the south part of Monterey along the 101 corridor, all this is also considered part of that. Okay, so clearly all many areas within the air district qualify as for this project. And there are three types of projects that they will be funding. So the large scale ventilation systems, HVACs are heating, ventilation, and air conditioning systems. So we could go for replacements and upgrades, or we could go with filtration. So a MERV filter, that stands for minimum efficiency reporting values. It's a rating system that tells us how much pollutant the filter will take out as it goes through the ventilation system, as air goes through the ventilation system. So MERV 13 is a minimum requirement for this program, and I'll show you why. And then we have portable air cleaners. So those are the kind that are, you can pick up, or they're on wheels and you can use in different rooms or move around from building to building. So those are the three different types. Let me go into a little bit more detail. So this picture is actually from the roof of MBARD. These are air handlers. There's three total air handlers on the roof. And so this is our part of our HVAC system. The whole system includes air handlers. Here's some of the ducting, and it covers the entire building. So these are pricier projects. These would be in the tens of thousands of dollars to replace or upgrade. The second type of project would be these filters, these MERV filters. Let me show you this here. This is the PM 2.5 zone. And Madam Chair, you were talking about PM 2.5. This is the more harmful particulate that we're most concerned about with smoke. And here is the MERV 13 showing that it can take out more than 85% of PM 2.5 as it goes through a ventilation system. So for this project, all the filters would need to be MERV 13 or even greater. Have you guys heard of HEPA filters? Those are high efficiency particulate air filters. They're rated MERV 17 or above. So we're just talking about MERV 13. Oh, you know, this picture here is interesting. This is a MERV 13 filter, and it's been taped onto the air intake of an HVAC. And I got this picture from ASHRAE, the American Society of Heating, Refrigeration, and Air Conditioning Engineers. And they've put together a framework on how to create clean air centers in commercial buildings. They have a 10-part plan. If you're interested, I can get you their web link so that you can see what that is. It's very interesting, and it includes things like, you know, go ahead and tape a filter to your HVAC during a wildfire smoke event. And then here are just a couple of pictures of portable air cleaners, kind of you can pick up or roll around. And these, the cost for these is going to run into the hundreds to thousands of dollars. So I was in touch with Kate Koch at CARB this week and asked her for a little bit more information about priorities. So this is what they said. Remember, it's a pilot program. They're still kind of putting it together. But requirements are, we've already discussed, publicly accessible centers. And then they'd like to spread out the funding geographically throughout California, but they're not requiring each air district to run this program. And then they're looking at the smaller budget projects. So her example would be a moderately sized fleet of portable air units with, you know, as much as $29,000 worth for each air district. So that's one example. Another example I can think of would be these MERV filters that I showed you. Okay, and that leads us to some ideas about where we might look at opportunities for these centers, schools, community, seniors, sports centers, libraries. Existing emergency centers might be a prime idea because they already would have plans on how they're going to allow the public in, how they're going to take care of them. And then, you know, of course, we're open to ideas about others. So that is the presentation. Please let me know if you have questions or if you want to discuss things.
Are there questions from committee members? Okay. Are there?
Is there a plan for, I guess, outreach to those people? Or I guess, like, you know, if you were a school or a sports center, how would you find out about this opportunity?
We have talked about that. That is definitely, I think, very helpful idea that we go ahead and start outreaching and saying, hey, there's some funding available for this. Your center may be a perfect candidate. Would you be interested? So we can do like a newsletter or an email blast to let people know. And if you guys have ideas about centers that may be good ideas, let us know.
Alan.
Yeah, since there's probably going to be limited funds if it's distributed around the state, it seems like there should be some targeting of the best, biggest bang for your buck type centers. You know, I'm thinking just off the top of my head, like high school gymnasiums, for instance, mm-hmm. and make those, because you're killing a couple of birds, you know, if you put high filter, you know, good filter systems in those facilities, both for the school itself and then the public coming in. And those are used quite often anyway, in my experience, for sheltering, for other types of issues. So is there some sort of plan to focus money versus biggest bang, you know, the biggest bang for your buck type of scenario?
Those are the ideas we've been batting around here. Like where is there typically the most smoke, and where would be a good place in a building that's already existing that probably already has a good HVAC that we could just help with filtration. So I love the idea of the high school gyms, because they're going to be used by sensitive receptors. Our kids are sensitive to air pollution. I've heard that a lot of the smoke in the past few years, especially in 2020, was concentrated. It got heavy in Carmel Valley and in areas like Bradley. So we have been starting to talk about where would we get the most bang for the buck, as you described, Mr. Stroh.
Any other comments? If not, we'll go to Rich's monthly oral report on activities.
Thank you, Chair, committee members. I'm just going to catch you up to what things that have been going on around here since our last meeting, which was back in March. As you had recommended approval to the board at the March 16th board meeting, the board heard the AB 2766 program and approved that as structured. We also, the board approved a racial equality statement that you can find on our website, which discusses, along with some of our mission and vision statement, what we're all about. So that's really, I'm pleased to see that happen. On April 20th, we received a presentation on our UCSC MBARD partnership, and this is where we're actually working with the university in their environmental chemistry department. It's one of the first classes offered in the UC system here on air quality and air pollution, and we've teamed up with Dr. Peter Weiss out there, who has actually been doing some original research for this agency as well in developing ethanol sensors to be used in wineries and other types of situations. Anyways, we've helped design the course curriculum. We go out and give presentations to students. And there's a sort of a twofold process here and reason for doing this. Number one, we're educating students that may be taking off in the environmental field. And certainly we want to give them some idea of what's available out there with respect to studies and work. We're trying to develop a workforce as well. And we've just recently hired an individual from UCSC. So we hope to have some workforce development and public education where it's really targeted. The board was really happy to receive the presentations. from students as well as the professor on what we're doing. And we're prepared to do another 3-year contract with them moving forward in our budget this year. So it's very well regarded and highly successful, and their program is taking off leaps and bounds, even with COVID over the past couple of years. We also received an assessment of our public retirement system contributions and trust accounts. And this is other post-employee employment benefits, as well as our retirement trusts. We are really happy to say that we're fully funded now. We've caught up with our OPEB account. That's sort of a rarity in special districts and government, so really proud of that. And we're just starting to make a dent. And these trust accounts are there to bolster the agency's financial position as we move forward. We're required now under many accounting laws and requirements to actually book our retirement and post-employee benefits as a liability on our spreadsheets. And that goes into the millions and millions of dollars. So we're trying to buy that down as quickly as possible, so we're on really solid financial footing. And then my contract had some amendments, so that went to the board as well in April. First public hearing was held in May on our proposed fiscal year 2022-23 budget. And along with that, we also had a first public hearing on our proposed fee regulation, which documents changes that will be taking place. Namely, we're looking for what's a consumer price index of 4.2%. As many of you know, it's a lot higher right now. But at the time when we developed it, we're going on sort of retroactively at 4.2 for last year. So that's been proposed. We did not receive any comments. We also held a public workshop and really did not receive any comments on our proposed budget or our proposed fee increase. And then just quickly on the budget, I mentioned earlier that the state's throwing a lot of money at us. Well, our budget's almost tripled over these past several years. We're almost at a $30 million. And the lion's share of that amount is pass-through grant monies. So with that, we do get to hold some of that back for administrative costs, typically around 10 to 12%. So we will be hiring a couple new positions, and they're proposed in our next year's budget. But positions over the past 10 years or so have declined significantly. I can't talk about district updates without talking about recruitments. Like many other entities, including private business and public government, we've been having a lot of difficulty with recruitments. It seems there's a lot of job availability out there right now. Currently, we're looking for an air quality technician and an air quality inspector, one or two. We thought we had somebody on the hook for the inspector last month, but I think they used our offer to strengthen their position with their current employer. So, it's been really challenging, and there's just tons of jobs available. So if you guys know of anybody, please feel free to direct them to our website. We need people to apply. And as I said, we're going to be recruiting once our budget's approved for two more positions next fiscal year, which starts beginning July. And I'll just go over the highlights of our engineering compliance program. We're looking at our final rule now, which you guys have seen on our BARCT. That's the best available retrofit control technology implementation schedule. So this is the last rule, and it deals with lime kilns. And when we say that, we just have really one plant that is subject to that rule, or maybe subject to it, and it's called Lhoist. It's spelled like Lhoist. That's out there in Salinas in the hills. And we're collecting and reviewing information about a control technology for lime kilns. And what this program does, it gets us a chance to look at what's been going on, and we can update the requirements if there have been significant improvements in control technologies, and then we can implement through rule change greater control efficiency at those plants. And it's subject to cost effectiveness and so forth. We just don't require them to do it without doing a pretty thorough analysis. Also, the California Air Resources Board finally finalized the gasoline service station industry-wide risk assessment technical guidance on March 11th. So we use this document to look at toxic air contaminants released from gas stations, which are significant and can generate a lot of risk. So this will be plugged into our air toxics hotspots and assessment program. And it's also known as AB 2588, which is outside of our permitting program, but it requires us to look at emissions and resultant risk. And then if that risk is higher than our thresholds, the facility has to report the exposure to those people that are in the public being exposed. And ultimately, they have to reduce that risk. We also, under delegation through EPA, our Title V program, we've issued a final permit to Monterey One Water. At this time of the writing, it was under review, but that now has gone final. So that's a major source category. It's greater than, I believe, 100 tons of pollutants per year. So a pretty big source, and we're happy to have gotten that through, and staff did some amazing work on that. We're in the process of acquiring a cloud-based software tool that will connect our Acela permit database to Laserfish. This has been an ongoing process. We've gone through a number of different databases, and looks like Acela is the one we're sticking with, and it's working pretty well for us. But we're doing a lot, as Ty mentioned earlier, with Laserfish, which is sort of a programming tool that we use for a lot of our applications, whether it's electric vehicles or SOAR or anything that's new. Our Whitstone changeout program runs on that, and it helps us do things efficiently and effectively. We've got this, our Monterey One's Title V permit was issued on May 3rd. And then a standing agenda item at every board meeting is we report on the number of complaints we've received in the marina area regarding odors. We have not identified a sole source of odor, and currently the City of Marina is releasing a request for proposals for an odor attribution study. This study will help find what the cause or causes of the odors are, and then hopefully figure out a way to control those odors. We'll be involved in that process. We're helping with a review of the applications. And so you can see from my report that we received 6 odor complaints in March, and then we received 1 in April, and we haven't received any this last month. And that's typical as we get more wind and unstable air when we start seeing the wind blows it away. But it was pretty bad. I've experienced it driving down Highway 1 when I go by the landfill. Monterey Electric Bike, moving to planning and air monitoring, Monterey Bay Electric Bike Incentive Program has been going pretty well now. We relaxed it. We remember we brought this to you guys, and we relaxed some of the requirements with respect to low income qualifications. So we're almost through that entire amount. We've got about $3,000 remaining. So that's about 3 bikes, perhaps fewer if they're, so we're really doing well there. We hope to bring this program back next year. And I want to thank the committee for your input. It obviously had a positive result, because we were having a hard time getting those monies allocated. And similarly to our electric vehicle incentive program, which is the passenger type vehicles, we've approved about 200. There's some still in the hopper, but we've approved about 280 applications. Only 16 of those are low income, which has the doubling of the incentive if you qualify for that. So we've got about 60,000 approximately remaining, and that's still in flux too. But we were worried just a few months ago, we had a significant amount remaining, and we were wondering what we're going to do. Next year's program is designed, we're going to up the incentive amount a little bit. We'll still have the low income doubling, for those folks that are qualified. So we hope to continue offering along with Central Coast Community Energy and the state under their CRVP program. And then hopefully we'll be continuing to give that out over the next several years. The three San Lorenzo Valley seasonal monitoring stations, which measure wintertime wood smoke from fireplaces and wind burning stoves, have all been replaced with our Clarity low cost sensors. This is a great boon to the district because it's going to take a lot less time for maintenance and calibrations and updating and that sort of thing. So the sensors are really reliable and consistent, and they're really a small footprint. They have their own data loggers, and they send it directly to us, and we'll be collecting data year round now from those, since we don't have to set them up and tear them down just for the woods smoke season. And then along those lines too, we still have a Clarity sensor network, which I think is one of the first in California, if not in the country. And this is set up to look at PM2.5, specifically during wildfires. So we've currently got about 25 set up and one at each of our cities. Most of these are at elementary schools. We have access to the property and we can get really good siting criteria satisfied at most schools. So we have found out some interesting things just by operating these, because in the past you saw when Irene showed you the map of our regulatory air monitors, we really didn't have good coverage throughout our three counties. Now we do, and these are sensors. They're not classically considered monitors, but these sensors are showing us that we have some drainage effects. That if there's somebody lights a match in San Benito, it seems the smoke seems to end up sometimes in South County Monterey. So we've been tracking some of these things, and we have a better, more granularity with respect to what's going on with respect to wood smoke and PM2.5 throughout our jurisdiction. So that's really great. We're compiling the data, and we hope to use that in the future and for a greater benefit. And then we've the San Lorenzo Valley Spare the Air program is sort of shut down because we're getting out of the October through April period where smoke dispersion is the worst. So I'm happy to say this year that we did not have to call any spare the air alerts this season, and that's a voluntary program. We sort of rely on the notoriety generated by the Bay Area, which has a program which is actually not voluntary, so it's mandatory, and they actually go out and sometimes do inspections along those. But since we're not really seeing air quality at the levels we saw initially about some 9 or so years ago, for some reason we've been not seeing as many stagnant air conditions, and that may deal with the meteorology or perhaps climate change. In this too, I just wanted to mention to that end, we've sort of granted out, I said 180 here, I threw a 101 in front of that, should be 87K this year. The numbers for this program really have been in flux. Prior years, we've had as much as $500,000. This year, we had to come up with all the money ourselves, so that was $87,000. We know that this next budget period, we should have about $275,000 for wood stove changeouts. So it really changes from year to year, depending on what the state is interested in able to fund. They've currently got a budget surplus, so we hope to get at least that amount this year. And then Camp Roberts conducted their annual burn. They like to conduct a burn so they don't set it on fire when they have live ammunition training. So I said here that they were on record requesting 9,000 acres of grassland to be burned, but that looks like they were able to accomplish their goals with burning only about 4,000 acres. And just on outreach, I wanted to let you guys know that we did have a public workshop for our budget. our April 1st, happy April Fool's Day. We published our online newsletter in Spanish and English. I know Janet's been a contributor to this in the past, and if any of you are interested in penning an article or some sort of writings, we're happy to accept those. And then you may have noticed this early in May, we participate in EPA's Air Quality Awareness Week. And I just want to shout out to Siri for doing a fantastic job. We were issuing daily press releases, and we're really, when I say we, that means Siri is really present on social media, doing a lot of stuff there and working with, we created our own Air Quality Awareness Week webpage. And then we also had a local call to action on 20 ways you can clean the air checklist. And then we're participating in a work group with the California Coalition for Clean Air. And there's going to be a California Clean Air Day on October 5th. Seems like there's either a day, a week, a month, a year, what have you. There's always something that's relative to clean air, and we try to get involved in that. And then, also, some of you may have seen this if you watch KSBW, but we have a couple videos out there, and one's on our electric bicycle incentive program. We think that also helped generate some interest in our programs. That concludes my report. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Questions? I have a question, Gretch. You discussed the particular monitoring programs at 10 cities. Is that the same program that was described in the newspaper?
Sort of, yeah. They called because EPA actually has a citizen science program where just individuals can go to EPA and get like purple air monitors. So it's a little different. These are the same type of technology. They're sensors, but we don't buy them. We sort of lease them from Clarity, which is the sensor manufacturer. So they're in competition with Purple Air. But we've generated a web page to show where these sensors are located. And there's 25 currently, and we hope to get more. But they're really reliable. They're more robust than Purple Air's. And what's really nice is they're only available to public agencies. So individuals cannot buy Clarity. They can't contribute to the data, which you may say is a problem, but we know of people that have taken purple air monitors, put them in Ziploc bags, and it's not showing any air quality problems. And I also met somebody who was driving around to areas with her purple air monitor looking for smoke, and she was recording the concentrations. And that went back to her, she geolocated that monitor to her house. So it looked like that her house was experiencing really smoky conditions where she was actually. So we control a little bit more with this Clarity program, and we've become sort of a really I think an elevated poster child for Clarity. They really like us and what we've been able to do with their product.
Okay, thank you. Are there other questions? Any comments from the public? Okay, on to future agenda items. Suggested items?
I'll just anticipate. I know David's probably chomping at the bit there. We are going to bring back the wood stove changeout program. And what we're waiting for is the state's going to probably put their own strings with attached to the program as far as how it looks and operates. So if we accept the money, we have to do things by their requirements. And typically it's a lot of reporting too. So once we get that established and we know the final amount, we'll be bringing that to the committee.
I have a few suggestions. There are three jurisdictions, county and two cities currently working on CAPS, which are clean air plans. And Gonzalez has one. It would be, I think, informative to have a presentation on those plans and what they are attempting to do. Some of them, for example, are attempting to meet the CEQA requirements and others are not. this may be a bit premature since some of the plans still are in early stages, but it's something to keep in mind. My other suggestion is, you know, I think we should have an overview of the CEQA review process at this point. I have a lot of questions on how certain issues are being addressed since we are no longer a non-attainment for regional air pollution issues. And also, how are we addressing climate change in terms of CEQA documents? So I think an update on the CEQA process would be informative as well. Are there other suggestions?
Well, sorry, what is CEQA?
The California Environmental Quality Act.
I just had a suggestion. I find it quite interesting, your deployment of this Clarity sensor network. As you develop the data and get some interesting findings, it would be nice at some point in the future to get a report on how that's going and what you're finding specifically.
Any other suggestions? I have no comments. Comments from committee members? Seeing none, we will adjourn the meeting. Thank you very much.
Bye. Thank you.
Bye. Thank you.
Thanks, everyone. Thank you.